Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Welcome back to the third hour of Up North News. We wrap up on Friday. What is this? I love my dog. My dog will always come. Who does this?
Chad Stevens. Ironically,
Chad Stevens. I see what you did there. Okay. We noticed it was National Dog Day, so we'll here in the dog days of summer, we will take a moment to pay homage to the, it says here, 48.2 million dogs living in the U.S., according to the American Veterinary Medical Association. Any idea how many breeds of dogs are recognized out there, or how many you suspect there are? Because, man, they come in every shape and size.
781.
It's a weirdly specific guess. It's 200 to 500.
I thought it'd be more than that.
The American Kennel Club only recognizes 195 breeds, while a federal or an international group recognizes 360. And then the line says, then there are all the experimental breeds. What? 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 Experimental breeds of dogs? What?
I mean, I would assume that that's a mixing of different
breeds. Yeah, but, you know, it's troubling. Let's see. They figure, how long have we had the dogs around? It's believed that early humans domesticated wild dogs about 12,000 years ago. And based on hieroglyphics and cave paintings, it's believed that it was done with the phrase, "Who's a good boy?" And that was it at that point. Yeah, they had their first.
I have a feeling it took a lot more than that to get the first dogs to be domesticated.
I don't know. If it was a lab, it was just, "Who's a good boy?" And that's it. That's it. It's like, "Come here, I'll rub your belly." And that wolf was like, "I'm done. I got a home. Somebody's gonna feed me." If you are somewhere in the Manitowoc County area this morning and you heard about or noticed a little traffic tie-up, it's because a truck tipped in Manitowoc County Friday morning, spilling out its Amazon packages. This was around I-43 northbound at Green Street Road in the Maribel area. And so there will be some traffic delays there, but more importantly, there may be a few package delays, which is rather unfortunate. But at least they're not like all being delivered by drone, you know, so they still have to be done in bulk. Imagine there's going to be drone crashes at some point of, a package colliding with a pizza or something like that.
I can't imagine what drone traffic would be.
The Jetsons. You've seen the Jetsons.
Yeah, but it's not going to be organized or nice. There's not going to be any semblance
to
it.
I think there might be. And for the same reason that, we have air traffic control that follows particular routes and, particular altitudes. And I hasten to add, since you're listening to the radio, radio was going to be a hodgepodge of stations that their frequencies were stepping on each other. And, if somebody would have the same frequency, but they would just have more wattage and infringe on each other. And then the Federal Communications Commission was born to fix that. In other words, boys and girls, what I'm saying is good old regulations. Things that you call regulations, I call protections for consumers and for employees
and for drones, they don't run into each other.
So yes, it's somebody has or will develop that system, because it's only going to get bigger from here. The week before where we said George Jetson was probably born sometime this summer, and so 40 years from now we're going to have the flying cars.
Yeah, I want to say his birthday was right at the start of August, so yep. Right as the show kicked off, it was a George Jetson birthday week.
Yeah, so we are, how do you kids say it? We are a Jetson Stan program. Did I use that right? No?
Okay. I think so.
All right.
It's just funny to hear it out loud. I'm sorry, Pat. I'm laughing next to you, not at you.
I see. I've got the dad shirt on. It's Dad Shirt Friday. And so there's no embarrassment. We have no idea. We think we're cool. And yours, by the way, I immediately identify it as a dad shirt. In part, again, your youth gets in the way. It just it looks like something that you would wear to bacon night at Wando's, and you know, down in Madison.
I have worn this shirt out before. I don't know if I ever wore it to Wando's. I haven't done a bacon night since college, though.
So. If you have worn it on a night out, I don't see a dad shirt is.
My dad wears plenty of his dad shirts out when he comes out with us. Like, he's a big proponent of dad shirts as well. And that's the hard part is I wake up on Friday mornings. I'm like, shoot, I got to participate in this dad shirt Friday somehow without having. I don't have a very extensive dad shirt wardrobe. So therefore, I'm like, all right.
It's not a requirement. You don't have to. I appreciate your willingness to play along.
I'm in solidarity with you.
And by the way, there's only so many more left in my closet. I mean, only enough to do the show till, you know, 2024. And then at some point, I'm gonna run out of these things.
You can recycle some of them then by 2024.
I will try, but and it's not that we have that many viewers on Facebook or Twitter, but they'll call you out because trust me, as a TV anchor, I had north of 200 ties. You know, I cycled through about 8 to 10 suits. Depending on how large I was at the time. And, you know, if you wore a tie a little too often, people let you know. Because there was nothing better to do. This was before social media. So they'd notice. So I have to see if I can wear those again one of these days. And can you wear a dad shirt with a suit? You know, can you put a little blazer over it? We are still going to experiment with fashions on Fridays here. We're going to lay some new ground here. For the men of the world and their tacky, tacky shirts. Back with more after this. You're up north. Happy Friday. This is our last Friday of August. I know this to be true because it's the 26th. And if we had a Friday next week, it would be August 33rd. And that is against the rules. Last full week of August, guys. A week from now, we'll be talking about being at the start of Labor Day weekend and drinking our pumpkin spice lattes. Yeesh.
I don't talk about those until September 15th. That's the earliest I'd like to talk about fall.
Is there a reason why it's September 15th? Again, weirdly specific stuff out of here.
No, I've told you before, it's my nephew's birthday that day. And so I use his birthday as the kickoff for fall. Oh. So September 15th is when I start to get into the fall mindset, but I refuse to acknowledge summer's over until then.
That's fair. I can work with that. And then we at Up North News will start getting a deluge of fall colors photos. And they're amazing. Don't get me wrong. We get, a handful of photos every day from our daily newsletter readers. And you can sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. You can send us those photos to photos@upnorthnewswi.com or just attach them to a note here to the studio at radio@upnorthnewswi.com. I am most definitely looking forward to what we get. Every so often we get so many of a certain theme though, that we have to bunch them together because otherwise people will be like, you know, are you going to have a sunset every day? And so some days we just have to put like four sunsets all together and say, yep, sunset in Wisconsin. Ain't nothing like it. You know?
See, I thought it would be the other way around where some of the readers and listeners would be upset that you picked a different sunset photo over their sunset.
Well, that was also part of the reason. Oh, okay. It's like, hey, wait, I sent you a sunset 2 weeks ago. How come you didn't use that one yet? And so the two that we've lumped together, sunsets and rainbows, we get so many of each of those. And they're great. I don't want anybody to stop sending them. It's just that sometimes we have to share them in bulk.
Well, now I'm going to send in my photo of my dog today for National Dog Day.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I hope that Remy gets to be in the newsletter.
I will be putting that newsletter together about 6 hours from now. So you're on
the
clock.
I have until then. Perfect.
Yes. To get a good one. Preferably with a rainbow behind him at sunset.
I don't have a rainbow, but we just got some engagement photos done, and he joined us in those photos. And there's a very handsome picture of him at the Wisconsin Capitol with a Wisconsin Badgers bandana on, and he looks adorable.
Are you about to tell me that he's going to be like your ring bearer at the wedding?
I don't know if the venue will allow it, but maybe. Who knows?
Okay. All right. We were at a wedding recently where I think we were part of the discussion in getting our friend's daughter to reconsider the notion of letting the dog be a ring, because that's a wild card. And you want to control things at your wedding, because otherwise that's how things, you know, get on Ridiculousness or America's Funniest Home Videos, is when you don't control everything at the wedding.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's a very good boy where he likes to be either my or Kelsey's shadow. So therefore, if he was directed to come to one of us, I think it would work out very well. But Kelsey is in that mindset where, yes, she's going to like to be in control on that day. So I don't know. It's to be determined. That's how we're leaving it right now.
Yeah, you thinking the dog is always going to listen to you, even in a big thing like that. You're going to be a great parent. you take that right into parenthood, man. Two stories out of Wausau this week that caught my attention, because it'll lead to a third story statewide, and both of these courtesy of Channel 9 up there. The worker shortage is being felt throughout the nation, from private companies to the government. And it's even hitting jails across central Wisconsin, along with taxpayers' wallets. The Marathon County Sheriff's Department says they're forced to spend about $3,000 a day to house inmates in other counties, even though there's plenty of room at the Marathon County Jail. Right now, about 170 inmates are behind bars there, but its capacity is 279, meaning there should be plenty of room. But there has been a trend, according to the chief deputy there, where they're not getting as many applicants for any of their positions, whether it's deputies, dispatchers, corrections officers, and where they're really feeling the pinch is correction officers' positions. And it doesn't come cheap, noting that it costs taxpayers in Marathon County nearly $100,000 a month to send inmates elsewhere. Story number two. For 2002, the Wausau Fire Department is changing its minimum requirements for applicants. The department is now accepting applicants with EMT basic training and level 1 firefighter certification. Applicants will still be required to get their paramedic and level 2 certifications, but the department will allow them 12 months to complete that training after being hired. Deputy Chief there says, "We've been running shorthanded now for almost 2 years, and we want to get those numbers up." City leaders have agreed to use some of Wausau's American Rescue Plan funding to increase staffing levels, but once the money runs out, the city will have to cover the additional salary and benefit expenses. The fire department has seen an increase in calls for service, but staffing levels haven't kept up. These things are not happening just in Marathon County or in Wausau. They're not happening in a vacuum. A new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, a nonpartisan research group, notes that the public sector workforce in Wisconsin has really taken a hit over the past few years. And we know there's been a worker shortage, you know, pretty much everywhere, but it's worth noting what that means at the public sector level for your local workers and your state workers. And they note that the Wisconsin Policy Forum, what they did was they looked at records for the Wisconsin retirement system, a great big system that covers most state workers, many local workers as well. So you can look at a big set of data around Wisconsin. In 2021, 17,646 individuals left the ranks of the Wisconsin Retirement System active employees database for reasons other than retirement, death, or disability. In other words, you know, they said something along the lines of take this job and shove it, and they went elsewhere. They point out throughout the article in different ways. They break it down further just to show that so many people are leaving the system. And it may be, it doesn't get into all the reasons why, but there are many that took a different job or, you know, became unemployed for a variety of other reasons. And when they show the graph of people who have left the public sector, you can't help but note the big peak in the middle. And that, of course, would be Act 10, which passed in 2011, that thing that Scott Walker never campaigned on, never said he was going to do, and then by his own admission, quote unquote, dropped a bomb and took away the collective bargaining rights of the people who, you know, plow our roads and in other ways, you know, serve us through the local taxes that we pay. Now, there have been new entrants coming into the system, and that does mean that they cost a little less than an older worker, but it also means that they bring with it far less experience. That institutional memory is lost, and sometimes that actually increases your expenses, as you know, if you have to basically retrain somebody. So the worker shortage is everywhere. It was already happening by demographics as the baby boomers aged out. It was exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic, but it is even more pronounced in the public sector because of this more than a decade long, I would argue decades long, war on public sector employees, primarily by the Republican Party, which is for a couple of different reasons. One is that they're only thinking of taxes and what it pays for. Others are, you know, claim to be small government conservatives and just think that there should be as minimal government as possible. Others are big into privatization and think that the private sector should take care of these things. You know, again, as if you do you really want to contract with a private company to, you know, to plow your roads all winter long? We talked to an Eau Claire City Council member yesterday who talked about how the roads don't get plowed now if there's a, you know, below a certain threshold of snow, despite the fact that the roads are still slick and dangerous. But it is this constant drumbeat about not just public sector workers, but, you know, then just unions in general. And it has been more than disappointing to see how many people, you know, bought into that and said, oh yeah, if it's a union, it must be bad. They're buying into the caricature, you know, of the cigar chomping union bosses and thinking somehow if you just get rid of that, all will be right. And it isn't. What you're seeing instead is that lack of, well, that diminishment of worker quality, that diminishment of worker rights, and that big increase in turnover. You know, that's led to discussions that we've had here earlier about the lower degree of service that you get when there's constant churn in the labor market. And so now you see the pendulum swinging the other way, at least in the private sector, by the votes at various coffee shops, at Starbucks and Collectivo. And I don't have it in front of me, but I believe I read yesterday the first Chipotle restaurant is going to have a unionized workforce as well.
Oh, nice. And yeah, I mean, I think the increase for unionization is great, but also just understanding what jobs pertain to the public sector is a huge aspect of it too, because yesterday Brian and I on Dueling Tangents had Lieutenant Gubernatorial Candidate Sarah Rodriguez, currently a state representative from the Brookfield area, on our show. If you want to go check out the podcast, you can, civicmedia.us. We got the whole podcast library over there. But I framed her as I asked her a question about this report, and I set it up as, well, as someone new to public service, because she was elected for the first time in 2020, what can you share your thoughts on this report? And she corrected me. She's been in the field of public service for a very long time. It's new for elected office that she was first elected and became a state representative 2 years ago. But she's worked for the CDC. She was in the Peace Corps. There are so many different aspects of public service work that is not just being elected to the Wisconsin legislature or being on a school board, or that there are different things that you can do. And really our framing of what public service work is, I think is something that needs to be talked about more too. Cause I was just completely in the wrong. I was like, yeah, I appreciated her answer because, there's a way that you need to view what public service work is. And we have to expand that what opportunities there are out there as well when we're discussing these reports.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, K-12 teachers make up a large chunk of this, and they're very visible. And we have to note that, and we haven't even touched on that part, the teacher shortage that's out there. That's extremely real, to the point where some classrooms are getting virtual instruction. as if we're still in the pandemic. Teachers from another school, from another zip code, you know, are you know, having to deliver classes that way. And so as this happens with that higher turnover, the Wisconsin Policy Forum report concludes, you know, that's going to lead to the need to, you know, increase worker pay, to do other things, to provide more flexible workspaces, may have to pay for new technology to deal with, you know, fewer human bodies working on something, and perhaps greater use of private contractors, which, again, cost tax money. So something that we've known since the days of Act 10 is how penny wise and pound foolish it is to try to nickel and dime to death the public sector workers that keep Wisconsin a great place to live. We'll be back with more after this. You're Up North.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
On Monday, State Senator Jeff Smith from Eau Claire and State Senate candidate Kelly Westland from up in the Ashland area. According to a story, I believe, from the Cleveland Plain Dealer here, the much-anticipated, maybe just anticipated, sequel to A Christmas Story will be released in November. This is according to Deadline. It says it's called A Christmas Story Christmas and will premiere November 17th on HBO Max. Peter Billingsley again will play Ralphie, who returns to his childhood home with his wife and children in an attempt to capture the Christmas magic of his childhood. Time for a true confession. I'm not a Christmas Story fan. I knew we'd find something else to fight about besides zucchini, you know? Wait.
I'm pretty young, so I'm agnostic to the Christmas Story, I guess. I'll watch it if it's on the television and if other family members want to watch it, but I don't go out of my way to turn it on.
I don't know when it got big. I mean, it originally flopped at the box office when it first came out, and then it was one of those that just got played, I think, by WGN and maybe some others, and that's what they had. So you, and if I suppose, with, like anything, maybe if you play it often enough, it grabs a following. But, you know, never been a fan.
TBS, I think, is the one that runs it.
Or TBS, like, yeah.
I want to say 24/7, like the 3 days leading up to Christmas, all day Christmas, and maybe like the day after as well. So it's always on. Like, I know during the holiday season, I always catch at least maybe a 10, 15 minute chunk of it, maybe a little bit longer if I'm feeling extra lazy and in a food coma from all the delicious food being eaten. But I mean, besides the "you'll shoot your eye out, kid" quote being used in pop culture, there's
the one that we use, and it's probably only seen I got a chuckle out of, was we still use the word fragile. For the fragile that's on the box when they pull out the leg lamp, you know, and how the dad character thinks the leg lamp is like really, really something.
Yeah, here in Madison there, the Caribou, it's a dive bar on the Isthmus, and they have year round in their like front display where you walk in that same exact lamp.
Oh, sure.
So that lamp is there at a dive bar here in Madison.
Somebody has to have it, you know. Much of the original movie was filmed in Cleveland, but apparently the sequel was filmed in Hungary. There will be no new scenes of Cleveland streets or the original house. And again, and this is the second attempt at a sequel. A Christmas Story 2 was released straight to video in 2012. So I just don't know that that's a...
It's got to flop first, then get picked up by a no-name television channel to then be ran nonstop to get a cult following and then build from there. They're taking the same strategy as the first one, Pat. Come on.
Sure. Hey, if that's what works, all right, so be it. One of the big stories this week has been the decision by the Biden administration to cancel debt, either $10,000 or $20,000, depending on the type, of education debt. And so the question has been asked of the... Let's see, the most recent number, 715,800 Wisconsin residents have federal student loan debt. So how much of that is going to apply here? And I want to give the source proper credit here. I think it's through WisPolitics, but it's a White House data sheet.
I believe it came from the Department of Education. So
there you go. Nick Hillman, director of student success through Applied Research Lab in Madison, says as many as 220,000 borrowers in the state could have their federal loans completely forgiven if they meet the income threshold. He says that of that total Wisconsin residents with federal student loan debt, 715,800 of us, or of you, mine thankfully is paid off, 31% have less than $10,000 in debt. And so at least 31% of that total group is going to have their debt wiped off. And that is, I mean, that's huge for what they're going to, folks are going to be able to do, you know, in their household economy and in the local economy.
Yeah, it's going to be transformative for a lot of Wisconsinites and Americans across the country as well. And I don't understand the bemoaning, I guess. And it's when people are like, well, I suffered, so others should have to suffer too.
Yeah,
I just don't understand it. And there's a lot of people saying, well, if I don't benefit from this, why should the federal government be doing it? And as a Wisconsinite, I don't benefit from the manufacturers and agriculture tax credit. There's no job creation requirement for that tax credit here in the state of Wisconsin. And I mean, it still got passed. There are plenty of things that happen all the time that don't affect everyone. And so the bemoaning around this debt cancellation and relief, much needed relief for, like you just said, hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites and more is huge. And I don't think we should be
turning our nose
up to that.
It makes, you know, for there's just some people that either live to feel aggrieved or they know how to make other people feel aggrieved and to concoct something forever in the us versus them vein rather than, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And that's too bad. But some people are helping to put that in perspective. And you had Scott Ross on a couple days ago from One Wisconsin Now.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday I mentioned him and Lee Zeiker and everybody else. And I wanted to revisit basically an op-ed that Scott penned to talk about, you know, the focus that they put on it years ago. And we've already, I won't dwell on the part about, you know, how good this can be to the regional economies and such. But he does want to make sure that he gives not just proper credit to the Biden administration and say that, you know, Democrats have given the student debt crisis a punch in the mouth. But he wants to take note that Wisconsin Republicans, on the other hand, continue to support the debtor state, leaving hardworking student loan borrowers held hostage to a system that treats them unfairly and rewards their hard work with decades of debt. Wisconsin Republicans passed and supported $1.9 trillion in tax breaks for rich people and corporations put on our nation's credit card, and yet they oppose relieving borrowers of any burden from the shackles of oppressive student debt. Scott Ross goes on to write, Wisconsin Republicans opposed removing the law which prevents student loans from being discharged in bankruptcy. Wisconsin Republicans opposed making tech college and university education free so that people of all ages and demographics can achieve their dreams. Wisconsin Republicans opposed removing statutes of limitations on debt collection and prohibitions on predatory lending. And Wisconsin Republicans even opposed allowing borrowers to refinance their student loans at no cost, just like you can on a mortgage, even though 9 out of 10 Wisconsin voters said they support this common sense assistance. So he just asked in closing that people remember who were the champions on ending the education debt crisis and that there remains much more work to do. So again, all credit to Scott and other folks who were advocating on this nice and early. We're now at the part of the show where I complain about what the Brewers did last night.
How can you? They flew home. That's all they did.
And that's the end of this segment of this is normally where Pat complains.
It was so quick.
It was refreshing that way.
Do they have a doubleheader coming up? Because before
I don't think so.
I heard that they had 31 games over 31 days, and so I got confused then because they had this day off. I didn't think that they had a day off in this stretch. So now I'm gonna have to go back and check who told me that and see if there is a doubleheader.
Well, see, now I got to go look. Of course, I don't have my readers here, but I'm looking for any signs of a doubleheader on the schedule. And I'm not saying, I mean, I know there's
been rainouts. I could have looked as well.
You could have, but, you know, then that wouldn't have been nearly as helpful. And you can watch me squint over here. but no, I'm not seeing anything there. So we got the three with the Cubs.
So maybe it was 30 games over 31 days or something like that.
Yeah, I could go with that. Then Pittsburgh, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then they go on a big road trip again. They Labor Day weekend, four games in Arizona, followed by three games in Colorado. Oh, I found it. After the three games in Arizona and the three games in Colorado on Thursday, September 8th, they play the Giants. They play San Francisco for two games at American Family Field.
Ah, see, so, I had a feeling that there was.
So that was probably supposed to be, was that supposed to be an off day? Because again, they're doing two games in one day. It's not part of a series. Because then it's followed by a three-game series at home against Cincinnati.
No, it's the make. It probably at the start of the season was supposed to be, but if you remember, the MLB owners did a lockout for the last offseason, and therefore, opening day didn't start on schedule for
baseball. That's right. That was this season.
That was this year. That was earlier this year.
I was thinking that was last year.
No, so the owners are now jamming in as much baseball as possible because they were dragging their feet on player negotiations at the start of this season. So the reason the Crew don't have a day off on September 8th then is because they had to fit in that two-game series against the Giants that they most likely, I would have assumed, missed in that first 2 weeks that was condensed off the season.
See, and I completely whiffed on that because I haven't heard about any of these makeup games for quite a while. But yeah, that does make sense now. So I'm not going to take time to pull it up. But if San Francisco is coming to Milwaukee to play two games on a Thursday, kind of makes you wonder where they are. Where are they coming to or from?
That's gotta suck. Yeah, I really hope. Yeah. I hope for scheduling purposes that they were somewhere here in the Midwest and they're not just flying to Milwaukee.
I was gonna say it could be St. Louis or Chicago or something like that. So you know, here's hoping.
Although I also will take any advantage the Brewers can get. And so if those Giants are very sleepy and tired and exhausted from the road trip that they have to go through, by all means, let's play up any advantage we can get.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely take it here. If you are watching on Facebook or Twitter and look for a way to catch us that does not involve looking at our mugs, we are now on TuneIn.com and the TuneIn app. And that includes being able to use a smart speaker like Alexa to ask for our flagship station, WXCO. And if you ask to play that or seek it out on TuneIn, you will get Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. And again, if you're catching this live and you go, I want to be able to hit fast forward on, God, he's going to tell another grandpa story again. Well, then we slice this three-hour show up into three podcasts, each one about 45 minutes, I get. You know what? No, that's actually a fair question because I haven't listened to the podcast, whether we include the commercials or is that a commercial-free deal?
It's a commercial-free deal. So you can go check out the podcast. Man. And there's really only grandpa stories to skip through then. No ads to skip through, just the grandpa stories you don't want to hear.
I feel like we should, set up little markers where if you hit a button, it'll skip past, you know, something like that. I don't know if we should let the sponsors know about that because I was just hearing from a sponsor today who has an idea for a new weekly segment. And, you know, we've already told one story today about, you know, cheesing off an advertiser. So we'll
have to hear him out then. We'll have to hear him out.
I guess. Here's the thing. Go ahead and listen as a podcast, but then we'll attach a list of places that you should patronize instead. I listened to a nationally syndicated podcast the other day and on the drive down here a couple of nights back and was amazed at how many commercials they put on to precede that. And I wasn't in a position because I was driving and it was, a rainy night. It was dark. So I couldn't, reach over, for the phone or whatever and hit it. So, I mean, there was at least four commercials that played before the podcast even started. And I know they know that there are skip buttons and advanced 30-second buttons, but clearly they counted on just enough dopes like me who at some point I didn't even want to skip. Now I just want to see how far this went. You know, at some point you've come this far.
How many ads can they shove down my throat?
Let's see. They tell me it's a 45-minute podcast. Am I going to get 44 minutes of commercials? And then somebody going, ha, 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 I bet you thought you were going to listen to me for a while. No. Now back to our commercials. It could be. I would do that. you know, it could just be me doing 44 minutes of live reads, you know, for sponsors. So all we got to do is get enough sponsors. That way they don't have to hear grandpa stories. I instead will extol the virtues of your product or service instead. But that was a lot. It was also, though, I mean, it was one of those great big behemoth groups, you know, that own something like, you know, 3.2 million radio stations. So they got nothing but space to put commercials on there. Anyway, we're really appreciative that you joined us here. This is normally the part where I say goodbye. I did this just for Luke this time.
See, Jesus. I thought you were going to do it again. I thought, oh, no, I got to see it. I was ready to pull the plug on your little
See, I don't
have a great weekend segment already now.
I don't keep a lot of things in my back pocket for you, but that one felt especially good. Let's take a little break, and then we're going to wrap up the show for real right after this. You're up north.
Having a record year. Yeah, I'm having a record.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Well, we're going back to 1982 again. Fabulous. All right, before we get to the weekend, once more with feeling. Packers preseason is done. I tried to catch a little bit of it last night. I got as far as halftime, but like I said, that's not my jam. You catch any of it?
I did not see. Yesterday I was in the golden era of television, and I finished the newest season of Only Murders in the Building. Oh. So I watched that instead of the Packers preseason, because I was kind of like, we're not gonna see. See, it's weird. They condensed it down from 4 preseason games to 3, but now it's to the point where that third preseason game is so far away from the still, because they still have next weekend off, and it's still not the regular season yet. And so the starters still don't play. So for the most part, you're seeing a lot of individuals that are attempting to make the team, see right. where it's talent. They're assessing all the talent still for who's going to make the 53-man roster. And so I saw that both Danny Davis, who was a former Wisconsin Badger, got cut before last night's game. So he was released from the team. And then we traded away Green Bay native Cole Van Lannen to Jacksonville. So the Jaguars will have Green Bay native on their offensive line. But those were really the two stories I was watching through training camp, and therefore didn't have a whole lot of reason to tune in last night.
No, if you're into the personal drama of will somebody make the team or not, and I totally get that. I mean, ESPN and others have made a cottage industry out of the little documentaries that follow somebody chasing the dream, and that's fine. And then for the rest of us who just sit in a bar on Sunday afternoons, you could put a Labrador Retriever in a green jersey, and if it can catch a ball, then hey, we're gonna cheer, you know. And everybody's going to yell shots, after a touchdown is scored, which tells you something about the bar that I go to on Sunday afternoons. What I do like when I caught the game last night was hearing Kevin Harlan doing the play-by-play, because I typically don't hear him on football games, because I believe he's a CBS football announcer, and that'd be a lot of AFC games. But in whatever capacity, I don't hear much, but I got to know about Kevin about 30 years ago now. And that was when we were living in the Twin Cities during my wife's residency with the University of Minnesota Hospital. And the Minnesota Timberwolves were a brand new NBA team. And so there was a lot of excitement there, NBA basketball in Minnesota. And Kevin Harlan was
back in Minnesota.
Yeah, back in Minnesota. Sorry, before the Lakers headed out west. And Kevin Harlan was doing the play-by-play, and the team stunk. It was so bad. And I think that might be the only time I regularly listened to basketball play-by-play on the radio, because Kevin Harlan could find anything else to talk about while occasionally mentioning, what was happening on the court and how bad they were. Just the whatever stories it was that he would tell, the interaction that he had with the other people there. And I really came to appreciate you have to be able to do that when you're calling a bad, bad game. You know, we can't all be Vin Scully or you've got the Dodgers in front of you every day.
Yeah, it's definitely but basketball is one of those harder ones because I feel like they must have been really bad because I feel like the basketball play-by-play is not as off, like you're talking pretty constantly about what's going on the court. It's not like baseball where you got to fill all that airtime with the stories. So I can't imagine how bad the Timberwolves really truly were then if he wasn't even doing the dribbling up and down and who's passing to who right off
the
bat.
Well, I think he was, but you just kind of hear that and, oh, he missed another, you know, or something. Just right. the spin that he would put on it. And so that's what I enjoyed about him, you know, and other people, they can just bring a sport to life. Obviously, everybody's been talking about Vin Scully lately. For me, for hockey, for example, and I didn't realize this, I am a huge fan of Doc Emmerich, who recently retired after, you know, decades of hockey. I mean, he made hockey sound magical, in my opinion. And it wasn't until, you know, the hubbub about his retirement that I realized there are some people that are not Doc Emmerich fans, to which I would say, you know, what's the matter with you? And in football, Wayne Larrivee. And I say that as somebody who, when we lived in Milwaukee while my wife was going to the Medical College of Wisconsin, I was a regular listener to WGN radio as well as WTMJ radio, you know, just being a news junkie, you know, working there at the time. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I'd have WGN on and I would catch Wayne Larrivee's, called Bears games. I thought, this guy's really good. So, after he moved to Green Bay, I thought that was a great catch on our part. And I don't even say that being a homer. I'm saying I listened to him when he was, you know, calling for another team. And I just don't feel like he has lost a step. And now I'm trying to come up with if there is a quintessential baseball voice besides Bob Uecker.
Uecker.
Uecker just here. Right. You had Vin Scully, and Ernie Harwell, Joe Buck. Jack Buck. Sorry, Jack Buck.
I was like, what?
Jack Buck. I told you I was at Target Field last week when mm-hmm. we were making a trip over to Minnesota, caught a Twins game, watching the Brewer game on my phone. And they were honoring some of the people that were going into the team's Hall of Fame. So a lot of people from the 1991 World Series. And so they were replaying some parts of the 87 and 91 World Series. And the funny thing is that there was, you know, Jack Buck making that call. And I'd like to think that more people, when you mention Kirby Puckett, they think of that home run in 1991 of game 6 that, you know, gave the Twins the win and forced a game 7 that Jack Morris ultimately won by pitching 10 innings for them. But that call of Jack as Kirby's home run flies over the fence and he goes, "And we'll see ya tomorrow night." And that's it. And he just lets the crowd take it over from there. I'm in awe of people that can do that. I mean, I can sit here and yodel for 3 hours a day on the radio about all kinds of things. I'll even end the show early unintentionally sometimes.
Intentionally.
Just to have something to talk about, if the case may be. But to call a game in front of you, I tried that once or twice in college, TV, both TV and radio. I think I tried both. And it was, again, folks, some people, it's not as easy as it looks.
Yeah. And if you're listening tonight, across Civic Media, all three of our signals outside of Madison. So Waukesha, Bull Falls Radio up in Wausau, and locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids will have high school sports on the call this evening. So you're going to want to stay tuned if you're looking for an example of what Pat's talking about.
There you go.
We've got a local team here at Civic Media providing those local sports across high schools around our network.
Excellent. Next week, we're going to have, as I mentioned, Jeff Smith, state senator from Eau Claire, state senate candidate Kelly Westland. Kirk Bankstead is going to be back from his vacation on Wednesday and will join Dr. Krister Lyerly. We will also have Joe Zepecki and Christina Laurie. Maybe. Christina Laurie has now moved into the Matt Damon category of will she or won't she be a guest on our show? We wish her well with whatever bug she's got today, and we will make her appear next week from whatever deathbed she's on. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday.